Greetings in the precious name of Jesus. Welcome to each one present. For a message this morning, I'd like you to open your Bibles to Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7, and I'm going to read the ending verses of Matthew chapter 7 here in the outstart, verses 24 to 27, actually 24 through 29 I want to read as an introduction. Take this as our text this morning, very familiar story here. You children will recognize the story. You have a song that you often sing about this story. Let's read Matthew chapter 7, verse 24. Jesus speaking, closing words on the Sermon on the Mount. Therefore, whosoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them, I will liken him unto a wise man which built his house upon a rock. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat upon that house, and it fell not, for it was founded upon a rock. And everyone that heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them not shall be likened unto a foolish man, which built his house upon sand. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat upon that house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it. And it came to pass when Jesus had ended these sayings, the people were astonished at his doctrine, for he taught them as one having authority and not as the scribes. My title this morning is simply, On the Rock or on the Sand? On the Rock or on Sand? We understand well the difference between building a natural house on a solid rock foundation. We understand the difference between doing that and building a house, a natural house, on the sand. There are some places in the earth where there's houses built on the sand, but here in Missouri we understand the likeness between the physical house that we build and the spiritual house that we build. In Jesus' day, when he spoke of this, he lived in the country of Israel. And they understand, much like we do, they have solid places to build their houses on and seashores to build their houses on. The seashore was maybe more familiar to them than to us. And Jesus closes the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6, and 7, with this little story that he says he's referring back to everything that he said in Matthew chapter 5, 6, and 7, which we refer to as the Sermon on the Mount. And he's saying, whosoever heareth these sayings and doeth them, that he's like a wise man that's building his house on a rock. And then he gives the opposite. Everyone that heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them not shall be like a foolish man built his house upon the sand. A rather simple analogy and yet very profound when we think about everything that Jesus said before this. We don't have time to read the Sermon on the Mount this morning. I'll give you that assignment. You do that sometime, but we will be referring to a number of these verses. Sermon on the Mount is one of the most important passages, I believe, in the whole Bible. If there is such a thing as one spot being more important than another, but it is the words of Jesus, his sermon, and he does give us this at the end, saying that if we follow his sayings, he gives us a good promise. The Sermon on the Mount is something that you can read very quickly. If you're a good reader, you can read it once a month for the rest of your life, and it'll probably only take you about 15 minutes a month to read it. And there will be great blessing in you doing that. If you're a poor reader, you find it difficult to read, you surely would be able to read it in an hour. And even that would be a great accomplishment for you, and I would challenge you to do that. Read this, Matthew 5, 6, and 7. Numerous times in your life, you will find it a blessing. On the rock or on the sand. We understand very well that Jesus was talking, his real emphasis was not on a normal house that we built, but he was rather talking about a life as a house. And so this morning there are 139 lives here, souls that are alive, souls that are built on something. And the question is your soul, is your life built on the rock or on the sand? We're going to take our outline right from the Sermon on the Mount. And I know that there's others that you could pull out as we go along. We do have 10 things that I believe Jesus tells us that we must follow if we are going to be building on the rock. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 6. I'll take my first one from here. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 6. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. This morning, are you hungry and thirsty for the things of God? I trust that's why you're here this morning. But are you hungry and thirsty for the things of God? Are you hungry enough that in the other 6 days of the week, you find time to read God's Word? How was it in Sunday school class this morning? Were you hungry enough to be rapt in attention and to be listening to what was said? Jesus gives us a promise. He says, you will be blessed if you are hungry. You will be blessed. And that is a way, I believe, that we can build our houses on a rock. Are you hungry and thirsty for righteousness? Or is there no need in your life? Don't you have a need? You don't have any hunger. You don't have any thirst. Well, then you're building on the sand. And you're building on the sand, Jesus is saying. Point number two, I take from chapter 5 and verse 9. He says, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. I simply worded point number two this way: are you being a peacemaker? Are you being a peacemaker? Jesus has a promise. He says, you'll be blessed if you're a peacemaker, if you're making peace. If you are making peace with the world about you, then you are building on the rock. You know well the story of Isaac in the Old Testament and his digging of wells. You remember that he dug a well. He had a lot of cattle to water, and so he went and he dug a well. He found water for his cattle. But his neighbors came and stole it. They said, we're going to use it for our cattle. And so Isaac and his men went and dug another well. Without any argument, they dug a second well. Same thing happened again. His neighbors took over the well. The servants came with their sheep and said, we're going to water our cattle here. And again, Isaac went the third time and dug a well. And then he found water again, and God blessed them, and they were satisfied. Are you and I that kind of a peacemaker in our world today when people cheat us, sidetrack us? Are you being a peacemaker? If so, you're building your life on a rock. Or are you a troublemaker? Are you known to be that? Instead of a peacemaker, you're a troublemaker. If you are, you're building your house on sand. Point number three, Matthew chapter 5, verse 14. Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. I wrote it this way: are you letting your light shine? Are you letting it shine? We live in a dark world. Jesus and his disciples lived in a dark world. And Jesus compared the Christian to a light moving around in the dark world. And he said, let your light shine. Let people see your good works. Why? So that they will say, well, that's a man of God, and they'll glorify God. Am I letting my light shine? Do people who see you think of you as someone who is walking in the steps of Jesus? Is that what they think of when they see you? Are you and I sympathetic to the unfortunate and the poor as Jesus was? Again and again we see him seeking out the unfortunate and the poor. Are you and I doing that? It's a little story about Cripple Tom, who was a boy, teenager, I'm not exactly sure how old he was, but he was injured in his teenage years. He was crippled, unable to walk many years ago when medical help was not nearly as good as today, and the doctor told him that he had some months to live, but he was going to die, because his injuries were too great. Like I said, he was very poor. His mother bought a pint of milk for him every morning from the milkman, and that was his main sustenance for life. He had other things as well, but that was his main sustenance. He got a hold of a Bible, and he read the stories of Jesus in the gospel. And he was greatly impressed by the man who went about doing good, as he called him. And he would talk to people about who he had read about in the Bible. The man who went about doing good, he would call him. Of course, referring to Jesus. Sometimes we wonder how to let our light shine, and that's what he wondered. He lived in an upstairs room on a busy street. The street was not busy with cars. The street was busy with people walking, and he could look out his window, and he could see the mobs of people below walking past his house every day down the street. And he wondered what he could do to help them to understand or to know about the man who went about doing good. And so he told his mother to cut his ration of milk in half and save the penny a day for him. And his mother did that. She saved a penny a day for him. And when the pennies came together, he said she was to go and buy him a lead pencil and a writing tablet. And his mother did that for him. And in his upstairs room, he would write little notes, most of them verses that Jesus said. One of his favorites was John 9, verse 4. You can turn to that. John 9 and verse 4. He read that verse, and he took a little slip of paper, and he wrote that verse on the slip of paper. He wrote, I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day, for the night cometh when no man can work. He wrote that down on his slip of paper. You think about what that verse says. Jesus is speaking about himself. I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day, for the night cometh when no man can work. And he took that little note and he dropped it out the window. And he hoped one of the passers-by would find it and read it and be as excited about that verse as he was. And he did that day after day after day, never really knowing where all the notes were dropping to. But one day, he dropped that note and it fell down and it landed on a tall man's hat. And the man felt something land on his hat and he pulled off the hat and he looked and here was the note. And he opened it up and he read it. I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day, for the night cometh when no man can work. The man was a wealthy man, a wealthy businessman. He was busy. He had an errand to go to. He stuck the note in his pocket and he went on with his day. But later in the day, he pulled it out again and looked at it. And he thought about that verse many days. And he began to read his Bible again, which he hadn't done for many years, and became converted and then became interested in where in the world this note came from. And he went back and pursued that and found this crippled boy in the upstairs room. Well, Cripple Tom was letting his light shine. And I trust we're doing that. If we're letting our light shine, then we're building our house on the rock. Number four. Let's read Matthew 5, verses 38 to 42. Matthew 5, verse 38 to 42. The words of Jesus here. Ye have heard that it hath been said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you that ye resist not evil. But whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if any man will sue thee at the law and take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also. And whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain. Give to him that asketh thee, and from him that would borrow of thee, turn not thou away. You noticed at the end of this passage, the last verse in Matthew 7, verse 28, it says the people were astonished. And I believe this little story that Jesus gave here, these little directions that Jesus gave, astonished the people. And I simply title this point, Are You Resisting Evil? Are you resisting evil? And I take it from verse 39. That ye resist not evil. And then he gives some illustrations. If someone hits you, you don't hit him back. You rather give him opportunity to do that again. If someone takes you to the law, and he takes your coat away, then you give him more than he asked for. Strange, isn't it? Very strange doctrine to humans, as strange to us as it was to the people that Jesus preached it to. How do you win going through life like that? And then verse 41 talks about someone who compels you to go a mile, go with him twain. And if you know the history behind that, the people understood what he was talking about. The Roman soldiers walked on those dusty roads in those days. That's how they traveled. And they walked and they didn't want to carry their pack. And so they looked for someone. They looked around and, well, there, that's a young boy that looks strong. And they would throw the pack down in front of him and say, carry my pack a mile. And even if you were going the other direction, you immediately picked up that pack and carried it. Because he was a Roman soldier. You had no choice. You had to carry his bag for 1 mile without any pay, just because he was a Roman soldier. No one ever questioned it. If you knew Roman soldiers, they told you to carry a pack, you carried it. And Jesus said, if that happens to you, when you get to the end of the first mile, you look at the Roman soldier and you say, I'll carry it another mile. I'll carry it another mile for you. Strange teaching, isn't it? Are you building on the rock? Are you resisting evil? If you're resisting evil, you're building on the sand. You're building on the sand. Continuing where we left off, 43 to 48. Take my next point from here. Matthew 5, 43 to 48. Ye have heard that it hath been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies. Bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you, that ye may be the children of your Father which is in heaven. For he maketh his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sendeth rain on the just and on the unjust. For if ye love them which love you, what reward have ye? Do not even the publicans the same? And if ye salute your brethren only, what do ye more than others? Do not even the publicans so? Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father, which is in heaven, is perfect. Point number five, are you loving your enemies? Jesus says, if a man curses you, bless him. If he hates you, do good to him. If he persecutes you, pray for him. Are you loving your enemy? If you are, you're building on the rock. Or are you hating your enemy? Then you are building on the sand. Point number six. I'm jumping backwards a little bit, back to another one of the Beatitudes. Verse 8, Matthew 5 and verse 8. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. This morning, are you pure in heart? I think that has a number of meanings. Two especially that I'd like to think about this morning. Pure in heart. What did Jesus mean when he said, blessed are the pure in heart? Again, he's giving a promise here and a command, I believe, for building your house on the rock is that you must be pure in heart. To be pure in heart, I believe, one of the definitions of that is simply in the eyes of God. In the eyes of God, do you have a desire, a true, honest, sincere desire to leave the works of Satan behind and to find out what God has for your life? Or is your life a life of pretense? If it's a life of pretense and giving people impressions that are not true, then your heart is not pure. It's not pure. God sees that. God's looking for a clean, pure heart. One that's sincere might be another synonym for pure. That's one definition of pure that Jesus surely meant when he said this. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. But I believe another one is very clearly Jesus in other parts of the Sermon on the Mount refers directly to fornication and adultery and the uncleanness, the fleshly lust of man. And if those sins are in our life and they are unconfessed and we are living in the pleasure of them, then we do not have a pure heart. Jesus talks about our thoughts. And our thought life needs to be pure if we're going to have a pure heart. So is your heart pure this morning? If it is, you are building on the rock. If the devil has made your heart wicked and your thoughts evil, then you are building on the sand. Number 8, let's look at Matthew chapter 6 and verse 19. Familiar verses again. I don't think I will read them. Rather lengthy portion there, 19 to 34. Jesus is talking about treasures. He says in verse 21, "For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also." He talks about material possessions. He says you cannot serve God and mammon. Can't serve God and money both. He gives the challenge of us worrying too much about what we need to eat and drink and the clothes that we need to wear, but rather trust. Instead of worry, trust. Consider the lilies of the field. See how I take care of them. I can take care of you. Ends it with verse 33, "But seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. Take therefore no thought for the morrow shall take thought for the things of itself. Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof." I've entitled this point number 7, "Are you laying up treasures in heaven?" Are you laying up treasures in heaven? I believe to lay up treasures in heaven, there's other passages we could turn to, but for the sake of time, I don't think we will. Luke 12, 29 to 34, and Matthew 19, 16 to 22 would be some references you could look up. Proverbs 13, verse 7. From those passages, I believe to lay up treasures in heaven is to choose to give up something that humanly appears to make me poor or vulnerable, but it actually spiritually transfers deposits to the heavenly account. And I'll repeat that. To lay up treasures in heaven is to choose to give up something that humanly appears to make me poor or vulnerable, but it actually spiritually transfers deposits to the heavenly account. Some examples of what that would mean. Start with some very simple ones that you might not think of, but I think they are true. You know, there are situations in life where we have a choice of whether to get angry or whether to sing a song. And to deliberately choose to give up the anger and to sing a song in my heart or out loud is to choose to lay up treasures in heaven, I believe. Sometimes our young mothers have hobbies, especially when they're young and maybe only have one child. Maybe after a while there's more children and life gets really busy. And mother says, you know, I'm going to give up that hobby for the sake of my children. Because they need me now in this time in my life. What is a mother giving it up for what? Well, she's laying up treasures in heaven when she does that. How about when I am falsely accused? Again, we could think of complaining or a smile. I can choose which. How about a day in evangelistic efforts where I don't get my normal pay from my work? A day in volunteer efforts. I believe those are all ways that we can lay up treasures in heaven. Why do we give up those things for what? Well, because Jesus told us to. There's many more examples of that. Jesus also says in verse 19, lay not up. He says, lay up treasures in heaven, but lay not up yourselves treasures upon earth. I believe Jesus would be talking about extravagant houses, lands and farms, stock market investments, expensive automobiles, gun collections, antique collections. He says, lay not up yourselves treasures upon earth. But can't we do both? Surely we can do both, can't we? You think about that. You read it again. Can you do both? Point number 8. Matthew chapter 7, verses 7 through 11. Matthew 7, verse 7. Ask and it shall be given you. Seek and you shall find. Knock and it shall be opened unto you. For everyone that asketh receiveth, and he that seeketh findeth, and to him that knocketh it shall be opened. Or what man is there of you whom, if his son ask bread, will he give him a stone? Or if he ask a fish, will he give him a serpent? If ye then, being evil, know how to give good gifts unto your children, how much more shall your Father, which is in heaven, give good things to them that ask him? I titled this one, Are You Persistent in Prayer? I believe it's another way to build your soul's house on the rock. Are you persistent in prayer? Do you ask? Do you seek? Do you not? Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 29 says, But if from thence thou shalt seek the Lord thy God, thou shalt find him. And if thou seek him with all thy heart and with all thy soul. Are we persistent? Point number 9, are you practicing the golden rule? Found in verse 12, chapter Matthew 7, verse 12. Also found in Luke 6, verse 31. In Luke 6, verse 31, it reads this way, And as ye would that men should do to you, do ye also to them likewise. The golden rule, we say. Question this morning is, are you practicing it? Am I practicing it? We give this little verse to our children, and I'm glad we do. In their squabbles and difficulties in life, we say, well, what did Jesus say? As ye would that men should do to you, do ye also to them likewise. So what would you like him to do to you? You do the same thing. But how profound of a lesson for us as adults, and how often we fail that one. Think about your actions of the past week, the difficulties of the past week. How much better it would have been if you had always done and said to others what you would have liked them to do and say about you. That's a way to build on the rock. Point number 10. Chapter 7 and verse 13 and 14. Enter ye in at the strait gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many there be which go in thereat. Because strait is the gate, and narrow is the way which leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it. I wrote it this way, Are you entering the strait gate? And I believe in our spiritual lives where we find ourselves today, it is a daily choice of whether of which road we go on. He talks about two ways. The straight gate, which simply means a narrow, private gate. and the broad way, which is a public way. In Bible times, the public way was about 16 cubits broad, 24 feet wide, maybe about like the size of some of our gravel roads. And it was made for people to walk on. It was a broad way. Lots of people walked there. And then there was straight gates, private ways, small ways, small paths that were 4 cubits wide, approximately 6 foot wide, and not very many people walked there. That was their way of getting around. Those were those two kinds of paths they had. And Jesus was alluding to those two natural ways in Bible lands. So what does Jesus mean when he says to us as Christians, enter ye in to the straight gate? What is the narrow way? The narrow way is what opposes our flesh and our human inclinations. It is what we have been talking about. All the other points that I just gave you, you can choose between one or the other. The one's a narrow way and the other one's a broad way. The narrow way is a way of confession of sin. The narrow way is believing God, believing what he has to say about us. The narrow way is believing our spiritual counselors. And the broad way is the opposite of that. The narrow way is hungering after righteousness, being a peacemaker, letting your light shine, resisting not evil, loving your enemy, being pure in heart, laying up treasures in heaven, persistent in prayer, and do unto others as you would have them do unto you. The broad way. The broad way is the way that is full of the get-even mentality. It is the way of the flesh. The human fleshly desires. Fornication and adultery are found there. The impure mind is found there. All the wickedness you can find on the internet today is part of the broad way. It is the way of mockery. Those on the broad way are mocking those on the narrow way. They are mocking those who believe in the Bible. They are mocking those who listen to their spiritual counselors. They are mocking those who obey their parents. And the broad way is the way that leads to death and destruction. The broad way is the way where you find lots of people saying, well, who said this is sin? Who said this is sin? You also find people saying, well, I never did anything that was wrong. I never did any wickedness. I'm not a sinner. So are you building? Is your house today resting on the rock or on the sand? Are you building on the rock or on the sand? We serve a merciful God. And there's another way I believe that this analogy of a house can be applied to what we're talking about this morning. And I'm glad that it is this way. I'm a carpenter by trade, and by times I get asked by people to put an addition on their house. The house isn't big enough. Maybe they want a couple bedrooms added. Maybe they want a bigger kitchen. Maybe they want an upstairs put on the house. And additions can be added to natural houses. And I'm grateful this morning that additions can be added to spiritual houses. They can be added to that. And so if your house this morning is not built solely on the rock, maybe it's partly built on the rock and partly on the sand, you can change that. God will help you change that. so that your life is built totally on the rock. And he says here that to the foolish man, he says what's going to happen is when the wind comes, it's going to blow over your house. And this morning, if you found your house blown over, we still serve a God that can build it again. Just like a natural house, when the storm comes, we can build it again. And God can help us to build our house and start over again. That's my simple challenge that I would like to leave with you this morning. As you think about your life, where is it built? Is it built upon the rock or on the sand? May God help us each to be honest with that question. And may we be ever ready to help those in need who find their houses on the sand. After prayer, I'm going to ask the song leader to lead us in Zion's praises, number 744. Shall we kneel for prayer?